I know that as potentially natural language processing, which is a big buzzword in the artificial intelligence space, but I'm thinking that's not the NLP that you're talking about.
No.
What does NLP mean, Stephanie?
Yeah, for me, that's neuro-linguistic programming. So that's understanding how your mind works and understanding how it functions, how it motivates your behavior, your programming, hypnotic language patterns that gets you to do things that you never thought before, and then really understanding the programming that you have.
You're talking to a writer here who believes that the shades of nuance between individual words might as well be the distance between white and black. I mean, there are certain words, like I was talking to someone yesterday about the difference between the word bold and the word power. And while they share a lot of the same meaning, one can have an entirely different effect on the way you approach life. If you're a bold person, that doesn't mean that you aren't powerful. But if you're a powerful person, that doesn't mean you're bold necessarily, and vice versa. Talk to us about how neuro-linguistic programming actually works.
Yeah, so NLP is more about understanding your internal representations of the world around you. So if you were to say the word bold to me, what does that look like to me? What does that feel like to me? How do I define it in my own words? And bold to me means being courageous, about being fearless, about being congruent in your decisions and knowing that what it is that you do aligns with your values. That's what bold means to me. But I could be sitting across the room with someone else, and when they, if I say the word bold, they're put off by it because their definition of bold is completely different because they encountered an experience where someone was bold and brash, right? So in their minds, they've connected those two words together. With NLP, it's more or less understanding another person's model of the world, how they base their decisions off of their beliefs and their values. And once you understand that, then you could be a person of influence. And then you can understand what words you need to use in order to make an impact in the direction that you want to go towards.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, you are doing what playwrights have done forever, which is I want to write what the character is thinking, but I want the audience to understand it. Therefore, I need to write the words the character says in a way the audience can understand and engage with. It's an audience-first technique. Is that true?
Yeah, it's one of those things where as human beings, we wake up and we pick up the script because I know what it is to be like Stephanie Liu. I know what Stephanie Liu is going to feel like when I put on her shirt, when I comb her hair, she's going to be confident and all of that stuff. But if I want to go ahead and influence a prospective client or a prospective customer, I have to put myself in their shoes and I have to understand their world through their eyes and in their shoes. And that's a matter of asking the right questions.
That is key. Smart questions yield the best information, and the best information can yield everything you need to engage with the person, ultimately convert business with that person if that's what you're after, and create the relationships. I like to say that you can be a salesperson who wants the transaction, or you can be the human being that wants the relationship. The human being that has the relationship can have an entire lifetime of transactions, but a salesperson trying to go from transaction to relationship, much, much harder to do. Again, based on what you said last week, you're all about that relationship with the knowledge that transactions will likely follow if the relationship is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's all about developing that rapport. And it's easy for you to develop rapport with another person when you're able to walk in their own shoes and when you're able to understand the language that they're using to communicate what it is that they want. Otherwise, you're just kind of like two ships passing in the night and you're so used to just being you and not really understanding what the other person needs.
That is so key. So how do you use NLP in your day-to-day business activity?
Well, NLP for sure is very helpful in understanding your client's communication language. It boils down to like the representational system. So have you ever noticed that sometimes when you talk to a client and you're asked, well, when it comes to social media, what specifically do you need help with? And they're like, I need help with like looking at the big picture. I want to lay it all out there and see what our roadmap is for 2020. That's an example of a client that is very visual. They like to see things in pictures. And so if I were to give them any kinesthetic keywords like, you know, I feel like in my gut that this is the right path to take, I'm probably not going to win that client whatsoever, because most visual clients speak very, very fast. And that's because they're moving from one idea to another. And so understanding that communication style, you know how to speak fluently in a way that is going to influence them.
Wow. So what you're saying is that there's not just one style of communication. And in fact, you should, to be successful, have different styles of communication for every single client, prospect, and even family member at home, because, well, boy, you're preaching to the choir there, because I've got three daughters and they're all different, and they respond differently to different types of discussion and inputs.
Yeah, it's one of those things in NLP where if you're able to understand automatically what your client's language is, and if your message isn't getting through, then it's very, very important for you to change your behavior. Because if you keep going down that path where it's not making an impact, where they're just kind of like disengaged, leaning back and looking around and just going through the motions, trying to leave the meeting, you have to change your behavior. Otherwise, you're going to lose that sale. You're going to lose that client. You're going to lose that opportunity. And so when you learn that, yeah, you'll definitely see it start to impact not only your business relationships, but your personal relationships, your relationships with your family. You know, I have like my daughter and she's 4 years old. And the way that she communicates is very kinesthetic. She's very, I feel, whereas I'm very visual. I think in big picture and I think in ideas. My husband's very auditory digital. He thinks logically and very sequential. Like if my daughter ends up crying, he goes, "What's wrong?" Well, crying in her mind doesn't mean that it's right or wrong. It's something that she feels. So if mommy comes over and mommy says, "Well, why is your heart sad?" Then she feels that. And then she just starts to bubble up. She's like, "Oh, this happened." And then she'll tell me what happened. Otherwise, like if you ask her what's wrong, then she's just going to clam up because she doesn't know what's wrong. It's not a right or wrong thing in her mind. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes total sense. I mean, back in, I don't know, what was his name? A psychotherapist named Gray back in the day came up with the coining of men are from Mars, women are from Venus. You know, and that was a strictly binary, two styles of communication. Yep. What you're saying is there's how many people on the world? Several billion?
About 7.5 billion. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's 7.5 billion types of communication potentially out there.
Yeah. I mean, there's 7.5 billion people there. And the way that NLP approaches it is that the representational systems usually fall under visual, auditory, kinesthetic, or auditory digital. And just by listening to someone's language and how they communicate, you're able to pick up whether they use phrases like big picture, imagine, or something like, how does this sound? Is this music to your ears? Or on another note, if it's kinesthetic, can you grasp this concept? Can you wrap your head around this, right? Or if it's auditory digital, does this make sense? Is that logical?
Well, I want to back this up a little bit because we're getting a little bit down the rabbit hole of what neuro-linguistic programming is about. But just being sensitive to the idea that there are different styles of communication. And by the way, it's all audience first communication. What you say is not as important as how they listen.
Yeah.
That is so true on social media. And I see a lot of people who are doing the typical, here are the top 10 blankety blank listicle garbage. And, you know, you said in last week's episode that you're a girl who likes to zig when other people are zagging or zag when other people are zigging. It sounds like you are about as far away from a listicle or top 10 or anything like that as you can get, because you're more interested in communicating with people in the way they need to understand.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like even when I was at Social Media Marketing World and I was teaching them about live video, I made it very, very clear that it's really important for you to also understand your audience's learning style. So there's the why, what, how, and what if audience. There are audiences that learn better if you tell them why your topic is super duper important. So like, why should live streaming be a part of my 2020 strategy? Well, because that's where you're going to find the most engagement with your audiences. And then you tell them what. The what people are usually the ones that like to know the facts, the figures, the statistics. And if you're missing that in a presentation or in a live show, they're like, well, this could just be all garbage. How do I know that this is actually true? Because you haven't given me the what. Then there's the how audience. The how audience is great. You know, they're the ones that want to say, okay, you taught me something new, but how do I apply this in my business? How do I get started right now? And then the what if audience is usually the people that say, okay, well, if I do this, what happens next? What will happen to my business? If I don't do this, what will happen if I don't do it? And when you address all of that in a presentation, then you capture that whole entire audience. This was actually done by Dr. Bernice McCarthy back in the 1970s. And she was trying to understand how students learn best. And she found that when she took students and she broke them up, like there was the why, what, how, and what if student. But if you tried to go ahead and only have a classroom that only focused on the why or the what or the how and the what if, then it was a boring lecture. People couldn't really retain that information. But if you cover off on all four of those parts, which is why it's dubbed the format formula, number four, MAT, then that's what makes it most compelling. So if you were to ever go to my website, yes, it's very rare that you would find any listicles. But if you actually kind of analyzed any of the paragraphs, you're most likely going to see the why, what, how, and what if formula in there.
Well, and I'm not even looking at the paragraphs. I'm just looking at the titles of the episodes. How to broadcast from desktop. Why now is the time to launch your course. What is GDPR and how does it affect my business? So you got a what is or a what and how in the same thing. So nonfiction branders, I'm pulling out the highlighter just to say, did you hear what she just said? She said that there are at least four or five styles of posts that you can do. Like, let's say that you don't have time to do a post that covers all those bases. How about do a post that is specifically answering or addressing one of those bases? Like let's just say TikTok. It's still a relatively new social channel. What is TikTok?
Yeah. What is TikTok?
If you do a post about like that, a certain part of the community, and probably a lot of them, are going to go, oh, I don't know anything about that. Let me read that.
Yeah. What is TikTok? What's the difference?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you've got four different, I almost think of them as bases on a baseball field. You know, you've got first base is what? Oh my gosh, that goes back to the Abbott and Costello thing on who's on first, what's on second, I don't know's on third. Well, in this case, what's on first, how's on second, why is on third, and then home base is what if?
Yeah.
There you go. So all of a sudden, Abbott and Costello, you need to update your act with what, how, why, what if. Boy, if all you did was sit down with a calendar and say, okay, I only have time to post one thing a week on Wednesdays. My first Wednesday of the month is going to be a what post.
Yeah.
My second post of the month, the next week, is going to be a how post, et cetera. And just do that. It makes your subjects really easy to do because you aren't trying to answer every question at the same time. You're just picking one. And then a good quality post about it, and you're going to be addressing a significant part of your audience, if not the entire audience.
Yeah. I mean, and even if you wanted to fold this into, like, let's say a live stream promo, right? Like, let's say on Monday, you want to talk about what your show is going to be about. What does it stand for? What's your guest's background? The next day could be why they need to tune into the show. Right? And then the show, when it actually happens, is going to be the how. So let me show you how my guest actually made this happen. And then the what if will be like, now I actually found someone else that actually did do this. And here are the results. Here's the case study. Here's the testimony. And now you have like this whole week of content for that specific week around that.
Stephanie, I am writing it down right here. My takeaway for this conversation this week is what, how, why, what if. If I can address things from my audience's point of view or with my audience's understanding of the way that they need to hear things, if I can address topics kind of with that framework, my social media calendar is taken care of in 2.5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And if you want to talk about like how to keep your social media calendar filled, you know, consistently and never having to worry about what to post on that, like we could even talk about a video first strategy, because that's the only thing that I really do is I shoot first on video and then I repurpose the heck out of it. Like one live video is probably 30 to 45 minutes long, but it turns into 26 pieces of content that I then just spread out over the months.
Wow, there you go. That's the way that you only have to do one a month and you've got everything covered.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus.
Do you have a VA or assistants or anyone working with you to get that stuff done?
You know, I usually have interns that help me out. So I have a UC San Diego that's just right over here. And one of my values as a part of like my personal brand in my company is to always be a mentor for the next wave of generations. Because I know when I was in school, no one was really teaching social media or hands-on. And so every semester, I will bring on an intern and they'll help me out with the process. I'll walk them through it, show them step-by-step how it's done. I have everything set up in Asana. There's private YouTube tutorials on exactly how to do it. And then they graduate, you know, and you start the cycle all over again.
Okay, I just want again to underline something you said. She said, based on my personal brand, a big thing for me is always being a mentor. So that desire to be a mentor is not something that's just kind of floating out there. It's actually codified into who you are and your personal brand, because a lot of what I talk about and what Nonfiction Brandversity is about is trying to get people to understand the value of actually writing these things down, to actually codifying them into a document that becomes something that you can continually refer to and also share with others. Because again, I'm going to guess, based on the fact that you have everything put together, that your interns are not just flying off doing whatever they want. They're doing it via the Stephanie Liu brand.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Their voice has to be your voice. Their style has to be your style.
Yeah. And it's always fun to have the interns come on board because they have their own idea of what social media is from their perspective of just being a consumer of it. And when you bring on an intern, you're able, at least I'm able to pull the curtain back and kind of show them, well, this is how the magic is really made. There's actually a process and a system behind it. Because again, having worked in the agency world for the last 15 years, I was the one that was developing the processes, the manuals, the procedures. And to take that and show them, this is how you actually do it. There's a plan against it. You know, this is how you organize your content. This is how you schedule your content. This is how you optimize it and repurpose it. Because if you're not repurposing content, you are wasting content. Then they, you know, they walk away much more powerful. And so many of them, after they've graduated, they're like, I've been accepted to this new agency. And you're like, congratulations. And it's so good to see that. So good.
And it comes out of the fact that you have a defined personal brand named Stephanie Liu that absolutely is the foundation for your company, Lights, Camera, Live. So once again, everybody, I'm talking with Stephanie Liu of lightscameralive.com. And if you don't follow her, I can't recommend her enough, especially if you're interested in using video, and not just video, but live video, engaging the power of live video. From when you started doing live video to where it is now, how has it developed?
Oh, it's evolved so much. So much in terms of how the show is produced, how the show is formatted, how it's promoted, repurposed. Even the gear, you could see the quality of the show has actually evolved over the years. Like before, I was just using the built-in camera on my 27-inch Mac desktop. And now today, like even just talking to you, I have a Panasonic GH5, which costs probably about like $2,500 just for the camera itself. But now I'm actually able to stream and record in 4K.
And the beauty too is for anyone who's into photography at all, you of course, we're doing this audio via podcast, but if you had my point of view, we're using Zoom to record this and I see her smiling face, it well lit and a little bit of nice soft focus bokeh in the background so that she separates her head from the background. There's a sense of dimensionality. And a lot of these things are very subtle. I mean, I'm a creative director, so I pay attention to this stuff all day long. But a lot of people would still get it. It's like, oh, you look so beautiful. They won't necessarily say, oh, you're probably lit with a ring light. And you've got this camera with a short focal length and a large aperture opening so you get the best soft, creamy bokeh background. You don't have to know that. All you have to do is say, boy, that's great looking stuff. Because mm-hmm. one of the key things about video is if it looks great, it holds people's attention a whole lot longer.
Oh, absolutely. And it's one of those things too, where I teach my clients as well as my students, I was like, listen, if you are going on somebody else's show, you have to stand out from the sea of sameness. So yes, you could go ahead and show up with the webcam, but if there's another guest there and you show up with higher quality video and audio that is crisp and clear, they're going to be hanging on to every single word that you say, and you're going to be memorable. And at that point, they're like, okay, cool. This is worth investing in.
Well, and all you have to do is look at the difference between national news and local news. You know, the national news, you've got, even if they're in a war zone, everything looks fantastic. Meanwhile, local news, it's a stand-up with a, well, not necessarily a bad camera, but maybe not a great camera person. And national news is riveting. Local news is forgettable. Not all the time, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The other thing I like what you said was if you have guests on your show and show up with a great look, I always have guests on the Nonfiction Brand podcast. And it's amazing to me the number of, I would call them big name people within the social media space who show up with AirPods in their ears and a crap camera, you know, with a window behind them so they're backlit and it's blowing out their camera sensor and it just looks terrible. I mean, it doesn't take that much time to figure out a decent setup.
Oh,
mine's
no.
A little polluted in the background, but you know, that's because it reflects the state of my mind, which is a mess of guitars and a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, I love it. It's all musical. It shows so much of your personality, which is great.
Exactly. And your background is showing your personality, which is it's highly curated, a little bit of Asian influence in the design over your, let's see, I guess that would be your left shoulder. It says Lights, Camera, Live. So you've got your brand right over your shoulder, the same way I've got my Nonfiction Brand Versity over my right shoulder. And that's by design. As is, if you look over my left shoulder, you'll see a framed article from Adweek, which again is important to me.
Yeah.
Well, especially because it's putting me in a universe, which is, hey guys, I'm not a 24-year-old who knows social media because they did it as a kid. It's, I know branding and marketing because I've been doing it for 27 years. And that doesn't mean I missed the wave called social media, but yep. It does mean I'm paddling a little harder perhaps than those who've been doing it since, you know, they came out of the nursery.
Yeah.
So once again, I want to invite people to learn more about Stephanie. So Stephanie, again, tell us where we can engage with you online.
Of course. So the best way to find me is on Facebook and then the Facebook group Social Media Strategist. And you'll know that you're looking at the right group because you'll actually see me in the picture. And I think, DP, you just said there's around 1,900 people in the group.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. Yeah, or 1896. So
there
you're four. Hey, you're four short of 1900. So
yeah.
I would love to challenge the listeners of Nonfiction Brand, the podcast, to go to Social Media Strategist, the Facebook group. It's a closed group. You have to ask to join, answer three questions, and Stephanie will let you in, especially if you said, I heard you on the Nonfiction Brand podcast.
And oh, that's a definite shoe-in.
yeah, it's a shoe-in for sure. And if four of you can do that and put her over the top to make that 1900, I think that would be wonderful. And again, I just want to say that Stephanie Liu is spelled L-I-U. And you also have a website called lightscameralive.com. I think between those two things, the Social Media Strategist group on Facebook and lightscameralive.com, you can get 90% of the gestalt of what Stephanie Liu is about. And I guarantee you, once you get to know her, she's going to become a part of your orbit because she's really a giver, very personable, and really smart too. I love the smart part.
Thank you. You never stop learning, right?
Well, I hope not, because otherwise I'm screwed. At any rate, I'm going to wrap up this episode with Stephanie of the Nonfiction Brand podcast by saying, everybody, not only join the Social Media Strategist group on Facebook, but consider joining Nonfiction Brand Versity, the free Facebook group. All you have to do is ask to join and you're in guaranteed. Once again, for the Nonfiction Brand podcast and Nonfiction Brand Versity, I'm DP Knutton, and she is
Stephanie Liu.
And I'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.